Welcome along to season 4, episode 19 of LOI Weekly. Ronan Finn and John Caulfield on the show today. It's pretty straightforward. We talked to the two of them individually. We're still on Zoom in this strange time that we live in. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see how Galway United and Shamrock Rovers get on for the remainder of the season. And it is thanks to our sponsor, Lottoland, that we're here. You'll find all the odds and special bets for all the rest of the SSC or Tristy League Premier Division season. Check out lottoland.ie/sportsbook. Make sure to stay tuned. I will be giving out some of their LOI specials during the show. You will find us on Podcast Republic, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, at LOI Weekly on Twitter, in association with Air Sports and Independent.ie. We'll obviously talk Bowes Rovers. We'll talk a bit of Rovers Milan next week. We'll talk a bit of John Caulfield's Renaissance. But Dan, whether or not we should probably start with Ireland and the rather uninspiring first couple of games in Stephen Kenny's tenure, and you've been very keen on Twitter to downplay people downplaying the start.
It's just, I don't know what you think. I haven't heard too much out of you in the last couple of days.
I agree with what you're saying, because it's like, it's just too early.
It's funny. I actually wonder if really the backlash has been exaggerated a small bit to some degree. Like, I think, you know, probably people, those of us who work in media and, you know, journalism, who like populate the online space so much, tend to react so much to like stuff we see online, like replies to messages and stuff. So like, you know, the FAI put up a post-match, you know, full-time result, and like 10, 11, 12 different people or whatever all reply and go, oh, a load of rubbish, you know, where, you know, like, it's not necessarily like a sort of a dramatic, the negative response. It's to be expected. This is part of what comes with the job. We've predicted it from a long way off. Mentioned it that, you know, if things start to go bad for Stephen Kenny, straight away it'll be blamed on his background. That's we said that with Mark Ross there last week. It was always going to be the way. And you just sort of have to suffer through some of that without being too sensitive to it and acknowledge that that is always going to be part of the process. But at the same time, he's not absolved from criticism in any way either. And he can't, like, it needs to cease. Like, this needs to be like a change of like football culture in this country appointment, which is a lot of pressure, both in terms of style of play and both in terms of the discussion. And like, there shouldn't be camps forming, you know, there shouldn't be any sort of like, you're on that side and you're on that side. And, you know, you're a League of Ireland person, well, of course you defend them, and you're not, what would you know, you only support a club in England. Like, that can't be the whole debate the way it goes. But it does emphasise probably why, like, you probably did need a win or two early just to calm some of that stuff down.
Mick McCarthy was doing COCOM, obviously, for the Bulgaria game. And Mick McCarthy's probably thinking after those two games, we would have gotten two draws at worst out of those two games because we would have defended more compact, as Kenny was saying, they protect the back four. So Ireland passed the ball a lot against Finland and really did nothing with it. So it's kind of like he kind of has to prove, I guess, that he can get them passing, but doesn't leave them vulnerable such that like we look like we're going to concede a lot. So it's just interesting times.
It's just a change.
But you say that about
the whole Mick McCarthy thing, like. Right, the Nations League, you play against teams that are roughly the same level as you, you know. Mm. And Ireland's big qualifiers last year were the four games against Switzerland and Denmark, I guess, where the teams were similar level or higher level, you know. Like, yeah. Denmark would have been in League B before. And so you look at the last six games. So you got Finland, Bulgaria, and the Switzerland-Denmark games. And Ireland have been 1-0 down with 5 minutes to go in all six of those games. That is a fact.
Yeah. No
what way you play, what your style is, whatever you're playing, whether you're more compact or whether you are, Ireland still conceded the first goal and were 1-0 down in all of those games. But Shane Duffy got a header in Denmark, Shane Duffy got a header in Bulgaria, you know, and there was a couple of rallies in the home games last year from McGoldrick and Doherty to get draws. So really, like, you know, that's the reality of it. And a lot of the commentary over the last week, there's actually not really been a load of people banging on who are sort of madly prominent figures who are like getting worried. Like, most people acknowledge who are following football are not getting knee-jerk. You did have the bizarre contribution where like Noel King came out of nowhere with a column. Do you remember, like, you know, I don't know if you ever
great
watched
job the under 21s.
Do you ever watch the wrestling back in the day, right? Where they have this over the top, like, choreographed thing where all of a sudden this character who's been in cold storage for like 3 months emerges midway through the Royal Rumble with a chair or something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, you know, here comes the Undertaker out of nowhere. Yeah. It's like, this is like a really shit version of that, right? Where like Irish people, and out of nowhere, here comes King. Here comes Noel King. And Kinger emerges from left field with his chair going, ah, oh, maybe he's
what did
not
he
the
do
man
with
for
his
John.
Chair? What did he actually say?
Or Roddy, you know, who's had an issue with Stephen Kenny going back 20 years. And I know this, having previously ghostwritten his column for a number of time, long period of time. I know Noel King was like, it was, in fairness, the column wasn't that bad, but just in the midst of it, it was like, maybe he's just not the man for the job. And it's like, God. I mean, I think a week previously he called him the Messiah. But look at this, this is the biggest job in the country, right, in sport, and this is part of the commentary. And it's just
the Irish rugby job.
Yeah, of course it is.
That's an interesting one now.
It's miles bigger. Are you
telling Ireland rugby team is miles better than the Irish football team?
Yeah, listen, I'm involved with Off the Ball, as are you. The number of texts they get from the Irish football team is far higher than anything else.
Who would they want more, Joe Schmidt or Mick McCarthy a year ago? Say a year ago, if they had Joe Schmidt or Mick McCarthy, who would they go for?
What, for dinner?
It was a hypothetical. Listen, you can have the Ireland manager, but you have to make a choice. It's Joe Schmidt or it's Mick McCarthy.
What, as a guest on the show?
Who's the bigger...
It doesn't. Maybe Schmidt might be the bigger draw, but there might be more reaction to the Mick interview. Like, this is my point. It's the biggest job. I'm not saying it's the best, like, that the person in it is doing the best job, but I'm saying that it's the highest profile commentary sports job. Like, we've never had the Irish rugby team's decisions and trials and tribulations discussed on Live Line. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, we've had that with Steve Staunton's ear and stuff. There is no comparison, actually. Like, honestly, there's a large swathe of people who just are indifferent to the rugby team, whereas everyone tends to have an opinion about the football team. Even if they want to give their opinion that they're shite, they're still giving their opinion. So that's the whole... And Stephen Kenny is now in that space. Like, that's,
what was he
that's,
like
that's,
after
that's
the game? Was he kind of chilled out? Was he like, did he show any signs of concern?
Well, the Rovers Bowl was Saturday, so I don't know if you were there for 48 hours.
No, I was at that game. I'll talk about that afterwards. You were at the Ireland game.
He was grand. Like, you know, again, like, there's a couple of very predictable things. You see some people don't know about Stephen Kenny going, oh, he doesn't look comfortable in front of the microphones afterwards. Oh, he didn't look sure of himself. And you see that from people who've never watched an interview of him. Inevitable. Boring and predictable and inevitable. That was going to happen. And we knew that was going to happen. So, like, you know, just accept it. Like, when he's winning, it's like, oh, softly spoken genius. If he's losing, it's like, oh, he's under pressure here. You know, like, that's always going to be a part of it. The one bizarre tone of commentary I've started to hear, though, and, like, there was a bit of it from, like, you know, people in the press box and stuff, like, talking about, oh, you know, this back four is gone now, like, it's been ruined and all this. I point out, like, we're 1-0 behind in all of the games, you know, all of the big games in the last year, playing in one way and playing in the other way. You know, Ireland have ended up in the same situation all the time. But, like, even now there's a sense of, oh, there's a new CEO coming in and the Irish football team is about results, and if they're not winning games, you know, they'll lead. Like, this is about changing, snapping out of a cycle whereby for like 10 to 15 years, the Irish international manager's job was one of the highest paid jobs in Europe. It was a top five paid job for like a top 40 football nation, right? And when things aren't going well, you throw money at a big hit to come in and fill the ground at short notice. And then you do it again. And like after two games, people are already starting to talk about, oh, they'll start to wonder about the commercials here. It's like, come on, like, you have to be better than that in terms of like rational analysis of where things are. But at the same time, acknowledge that, of course, if they lose in Slovakia, which is very possible, you know, there's going to be a big backlash, and you just have to hold firm and stick with your beliefs and trust that this was a long-term appointment. Now, in a weird way, we are not going down to COVID talk. We're not going down to COVID town today, right? I don't like discussing it with you. But in a weird way, right, all the pressure around the Euros has been about missing this incredible occasion in Dublin, you know, next year that we can't bear to miss out on. Who knows if we're even going to have that occasion now? And in a weird way, maybe now is the right time to be experimenting, because international football is never going to be as low key, perhaps, as it might be. And in a way, like, if there's no one going to the games and this existence is going to stick around for a while, you may as well try and implement your style now and be ready for whenever we break back out into the world again. Because, like, we don't even know if when the qualifiers for the World Cup start next March, if the fans are going to be there. But, like, I think Stephen Kingsford deserves the time to maybe have a home game with crowd there, you know? Mm. Like, and like, people are rushing to judgment. I can't stress, like, of all the closed doors games I've been to, this, you know, in recent time, there's no doubt that the cavernous Aviva, you know, and the players were in a bit of pre-season mode or whatever. It was like no other international game I've ever covered before. And I actually just found it hard, really hard, having done the first one off the telly, and I was a lot more engaged by that and analysing it. But I even found with Sunday, it was just, this is such a weird non-event here that I can't get energised by anything here. Now, this is only what it is. It's a,
you're energised today.
It's something. Well, yeah, energised enough, you know.
Yeah.
Energised enough.
I
just think we need to just, everyone just needs to chill, but at the same time also not be too hypersensitive either and accept it's the biggest sporting job in the country. There will be people with opinions you don't like about it. That's absolutely fine. Like after Mick McCarthy's first game in Gibraltar as well, a lot of people, well, this is why do we bring this dinosaur back? Like, yeah. And I was after one, and that wasn't fair either. So
most of us follow the League of Ireland, follow a team that he didn't manage as well. And, you know, I'm quite happy to take a dispassionate view and say, like, you know, there are lots of things that he needs to work on. He knows that himself. But I'm, you know, I think we're here for the long haul. And if we lose to Slovakia, big deal. If you're going to be judging things on three games, two of them behind closed doors, three of them behind closed doors, in you know, two of them not all that important in the overall scheme of things, well, then you're an idiot. So we just get on with it and get on to the next game.
I think anyone who had a strong opinion after the two games last week, a really strongly negative one, probably had a preconceived notion already. That's the point I would make. You know, so really, but I honestly think that that's actually like a noisy minority. I think a lot of people broadly get what this is about. But at the same time, let's not be naive as well. Like a win or two in this run would be nice just to take a breath and get time. Like we could talk about, we can move back to the league and look at Stephen Bradley now and Rovers and Bows. And you know, Stephen Bradley is quite likely on the way to a league title. But I mean, there's still work to do, of course. But, you know, they sort of trusted in their process when things weren't going well. And he could, you know, if it had been left to a referendum, you know, I think he would have gone at certain stages, there's no doubt. And yet it was all building towards something eventually. So
well, we've three, you know, very, very high achieving managers in the league. We've obviously Keith Long's done an unbelievable job. We've, you know, obviously Bradley. And we have Gio Vagnoli, who's basically unbeaten at Dundalk and looks like they're going to be fine. Like, you know.
You have to be patient. Trust the process.
It's just interesting times. I suppose we should talk about that game. Obviously, you watched the game. I don't know, Dan. So the big talking point was obviously I think the big talking point was the tackle scales on Danny Grant. And everyone around me was like, that was a Stonewall penalty. And then I watched it back and I was like, Derek Tomney, you may have made an incredibly brave call and you may have gotten a right.
I don't know. I think Rovers players think it was a penalty. So, I think they got away with one.
Yeah.
They got away with one.
I'm slightly on the fence because I think he kind of ran into him. I don't know what he could have done in that situation. In any event, Rovers have scraped through another game. We'll talk to Ronan Finn about it, but you know, they're 5 points ahead now. That was their hardest game probably left, with the exception of the Dundalk game. They're playing Milan. I don't really know how can they blow it, basically? Can they blow it?
I suppose the only thing is, I mean, they need someone to go on an exceptional run, because it does look like teams are just going to go in and sit in against them. And they may have more days. They may have more nil-alls. So, like if someone can get a run together from somewhere, then like they could draw their way out of the title, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's reliant on Bo was realistically putting a run together. I mean, again, like Dundalk have chosen to take themselves out of the title race, and they've quite politely excused themselves from the table and chose to leave. So
what did you make of the game? Actually,
they're not there. Well, I only saw the second half because I was out at an Ireland press conference, I've seen highlights. So, like, I actually thought that Bowes, in fairness to them, like the last 15, 20 minutes, like they created they created moments. And
well, Danny Mandrew comes on and he was the best player in the pitch.
Yeah,
it was kind of one where it was like, oh, this lad has so much talent. Yes, he's not playing for whatever reason, and he was brilliant in that 20 minutes. By far, Bowes' best player. But it's like,
apparently very good on the under-21 training camp last week as well too. But I mean, clearly, like things haven't been. I don't think it's a massive revelation to say that, like, you know, I don't think he's necessarily having great relations with people at the club there at the moment.
Right. And
I don't think anyone really expects him to be there next February. So
I'm going to say the talking point apart from that was Pat's losing 3-0 in Waterford, which. Again, you have a manager who's just starting off and sort of did chances at nil all. But Pats have a serious problem because when they fall behind in games, they generally just struggle to get back in. And this was poor. And, you know, the first goal they gave away, always going to be crucial. Massive mix-up at the back, I think, between Desmond and Brendan Clark. And it's like, yeah, this is... Pats are closer at the moment. Now, the table is crazy, but they're closer at the moment to second last, I think, than the top four, we'll say.
Yeah, no, like I think we can't even analyse the league table in that much depth because it's swinging so much either
bad.
Way. And, you know, like, you have Sligo Rovers up to third now. Like I said, like, you know, the Dock have been really poor, and yet, like, with a game in hand, like, they're third comfortably if they win it. You know what I mean? Like, so that's like there's maybe that Cork Finn Harp situation at the bottom that's maybe starting to develop, but beyond that, yeah, Pats is a weird one. I mean, it's a strange one with Pats really, because I think obviously this was meant to be a first full 36 game season for Stevie O'Donnell, and it's ended up like turning into this condensed probably race for Europe, and there's definitely a degree of pressure that comes with it. And yeah, I've watched them a few times now. I actually haven't seen them in the flesh other than the Dundalk game, the first one after the break, where a lot of people were optimistic. So I've only watched them on TV since. Strange, like, just making, conceding really bad goals. Georgie Kelly hasn't clicked. I think you'd have to
Not
say
yet,
he hasn't clicked at all when he's getting a run of games after a period of time. But I suppose there's an element of, like, you know, you've made an appointment there and you have to trust and give it time. But there's just a slight brittleness about them, like, you know, like that would sort of would worry you a small bit, you know, that they don't look like a team that's like, if you talk about, like, look at Rovers at the weekend, who again, like, as much as Rovers haven't set the world alight, they're still, you know, they still haven't lost, you know, like, they still haven't lost a game. So, like, there's a sort of there's a steel there, whereas Pats seem like they take the least possible out of every game.
I went for a pint to watch the Ireland game with Rory Hewson from RTE, and he was absolutely buzzing about how well Sligo are doing. He also informed me that you're going to have to help me with his name here. Penny Gangas, is it? The Finnish
left. Timu.
Timu actually had a feature in the Sligo Champion on Sligo tourism, spread over two pages. His Instagram has made so much of a hit.
Oh, I mean, at the start of the season, I did a piece about foreign players coming to Ireland. And Timo's Instagram pretty much gave us the money shot, like, you know, man walking through countryside, like, you know, big, tall Scandinavian lad as well. Just adds, like...
Memories,
like,
of the Vikings. Are Finns Scandinavian, actually? I don't think they are.
Oh, what would you describe them as?
I think they're Baltic, but I think they're exempt from the Scandinavian moniker.
Are they?
Yeah,
That's interesting. That's a mistake I've been making for years in that case. There's definitely a sense of...
Are you Googling Finn Scandinavia there?
I am. I'm trying to get on top of the situation here.
Tell you one man who's on top of the situation. That's Timu. The big man is in the Sligo Champion as a journalist, effectively.
But he just looks like a man who's, like, actually conquering new lands in his photographs, you know. Mm. But is Finland a part of Scandinavia or not? I've somehow found a weird question answer. It was someone from the Netherlands answering the question. And the answer appears to me... appears to be no. So there you go.
Yeah. But Sligo, in any event, they're third.
Nordic. It's Nordic country. There you go.
So they've won five games after losing their first four, and they play Pats in a fascinating game. But it's just the table is just absolutely insane. Dan, the first division is arguably even more insane.
Yeah, and just by the way, I'm just thinking that what we've just done there is called like Katie Taylor British. Like that's the type we've just become the Sky Sports people who do those things. But the first division is nuts, and I think we'll probably touch on this with John Caulfield in our chat now because it definitely looks like, you know, the shortened season, you always had this the pass the parcel sort of situation that could develop that, like, you know, when the music stops, like, who's going to be holding it? Because I think with another series of games, you could probably get a different series of results. If people say the league table never lies, this one might sort of, you know.
Like 3 points between first and sixth,
which
is, like, absolutely insane. And then you've got always 6 points off. But things are going for JC.
Well, listen. Why don't we hear from the man himself and discuss that? Because it's always nice to have Johnny Ward and John Caulfield on the same page in the same discussion together at last.
We're joined by John Caulfield now, and John, I don't know. I guess there's an obvious place to start here. It's been a bit of a whirlwind. Your first three games at Galway United, they've scored 9 goals. You were a long time out of the game as well. You obviously had a lot of time to recharge. What's it like being back at the coalface in such a mad season as well?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Obviously, you know, I suppose the time I finished up with Cork, you know, you needed that 3 or 4 or 5 months to recharge because it was very intense, and obviously, you know, at that time we were challenging up the top, and you know, there's huge pressure because the expectations were high and we'd done so well. So, you know, it was a good time to recharge, and you know, I suppose I was looking for the right opportunity to get involved, and a few things had come up over a period of time, but they just weren't ideal. And then when Galway came up in the circumstances, it was very quick the way it happened, and you know, I'm delighted. Great come in, and response from the guys have been brilliant, and you know, I felt the team were underachieving a bit, and we got cracking straight away. So the first 2 weeks have been great. The lads have worked really hard. We brought in some extra training sessions, and you know, but we hadn't been scoring goals. There was lack of confidence within the team, and you know, I love the teams to attack and create chances and score. And you know, so the Shelburne game was interesting because, you know, the last 15 minutes of fitness, you know, told. But we had done really well and we'd scored chances. But in the last two matches, you know, Wait at Loan was always a tricky one, but you know, we got four and did well. And the other night was unusual because UCD were on a really good run. You know, but you know, to go up and score 3 goals in UCD, keep a clean sheet. And we probably created another 4 or 5 very good chances. So overall I'm happy with the way things have started, you know.
Do you think you need, after something as big as the Cork job and as long as it went on, do you think you need time to just regroup yourself mentally afterwards? Because, you know, maybe there would have been other jobs that came up, but like, did it serve you well that you were able to take stock and look forward to a new challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose in the meantime, you know, I think, look, everyone knows Cork was personal to me because obviously it's a club I've been with since, you know, I moved to Cork and played there for 15, 16 seasons, support the club and then manage it. So, you know, everyone knows my connection there. And you know, so when you come out and the pressure is so big because, you know, you're part of the whole thing and everyone, everywhere knows you and it's like that. So you do need that. And as well as that, you have to, I suppose, Johnny, regroup and you know, you look at stuff that you would have done well, stuff that you may not have gone as well as it'd been. And it gives you that chance to reflect and then, you know, when you come out for 3 or 4 months, gives you an opportunity then to go back and visit other clubs and go cross channel and you know, get more ideas and, you know, look at things. And that's really what I'd done. Now, I had come back in the meantime and back on the road and started working for Diageo on a short term basis. So at least, you know, my mind was active, but I was still traveling to the UK quite a bit, looking at sessions and going to different clubs. And, you know, that's my passion. So, to be honest, you know, when the Galway scenario came up, it happened really in the space of 24 hours, and you know, but I was ready for the challenge, and I suppose there's lots of similarities from where I was, you know, club not doing well on the pitch, stuff maybe off the pitch had to be sorted out, so there's lots of stuff, but I have quite a bit of experience in that side, but ultimately it's about the team and getting the team right, and at the minute, you know, there was quite a number of players that were injured, maybe not. Or I'm performing. And it's up to me then to try and bring the confidence back and assess it. And, you know, I like to have exciting teams. You know, I want to win and I want to score goals. And you know, so that's what I'm trying to do at the moment. And, you know, a lot of the players have responded really well. And, you know, so it's all part of it, you know.
Where did you go, John? You said you mentioned went to clubs in the UK. I know it's standard enough to go and just watch teams train or whatever, but what, you know, who are you going to watch and what are you hoping to get from it? Just trends, what's going on, like what other people are doing?
Yeah, I suppose look at Millwall, I've been in Rochdale, do you know what I mean? I've been up to Sunderland. So like this context you have, you know, I like to go to sort of clubs that are relevant to our league, Dan. You know what I mean? It's grand when you're doing your pro license and even your A license and going to Premier Division clubs, or, you know, we had been in Eindhoven and clubs like that. But realistically, I prefer to go to clubs that are more relevant to the league we're in, you know. And it's like everything else. It's the way the game is changing nowadays. It's always looking for insights and, you know, how people do it differently. You know, I always say in management, you know, the one thing about the pro license or the A license, you know, they all teach you how to coach. But ultimately in management in Ireland, it's, you know, in big European clubs, they all have coaches and managers in all different areas. Over here, a manager is nearly an all-in-one. He needs to bring in his own team, but ultimately, it's about managing people and managing players. And I always feel that, you know, from a pro license, you know, they coach you how to, you know, the coach in your different systems or styles, whatever you want. But ultimately, you have to deal with people. You know, you have to get the best out of people and you have to treat people properly. You know, you're dealing with people who are 18, you're dealing with other people who are 35. You know, everyone has their own problems, everyone has their own issues, you know. So, and that's probably the one area I always felt that in the pro license that coaches should be encouraged more, I think, to go and manage in junior football and non-league and get dealing with people and get dealing with guys who are dropped and fellas who take off their jersey and throw it in your face and who give you abuse. And, you know, and you learn from those scenarios, and the non-league scene was very good to me because I learned a lot of stuff. And certainly by the time I got into the League of Ireland management with Cork, I had a lot of experience of dealing with issues and stuff, and I felt it was invaluable. And that's why with Galway, you know, from that, I feel that, you know, there's lots of things since I've come into the club that I can deal with straight away because I've seen them before.
Yeah, that's interesting. I remember Pat Fenlon speaking at one stage about maybe it might have been his time at Bowes that, like, management in the league here is so intense. Like, you can be doing everything, you know, like, you can be involved in a lot of aspects of the club. So does that mean that when you're at a job for five, you know, a long period of time, that it must be very intense? Like, it's a, you know, I mean, like, even at the end of it, I don't know, is fatigue the right word, but was there almost a bit of a relief initially that you don't have these responsibilities hanging over you for a week or two, just to almost recharge your batteries in some way, because it's full on.
Dan, you know, people can say what you want in terms of a job. It's not like a job that, you know, I've worked for good companies, Diageo, Bulmers, you know, companies like that where, you know, you're off for the weekend, you know, and you play your football. To me, in football, it's 24/7. And if you don't apply that way, I don't know how you can be successful. That's my own opinion. Now, there's probably other people out there saying, well, they can take a couple of days off and they can go away with the family. That wasn't the experience I had. My experience was that it was just, you know, you played on a Friday night. The following night, you might be up in Sligo. You might be up in Bray. You're watching the games. So it was just constant, you know. And you're right, when you come out, then you just go and probably take a big deep breath and realise, Jesus, was that intense? And at home, they'll tell you that. They'll say, look, we haven't seen you for 5 years. You know, that's just the way it was. You know, because you come home from a match, an away game, you know, you might be home at 3 in the morning. You're up watching the game the following morning. It's probably 8, 9. You're in to do the recovery. You might even be in on Sunday because you have Monday. You know, and with Europe, you're constantly on the go. So, and you're always trying to improve and do things. So I suppose from that point of view, I just feel that it was a 24/7 game. And when people said, you want your day off, I really don't see in football a day off. You know, like today, we see a train this evening. Yesterday was technically, we played UCD Monday night. Yesterday, 3 or 4 meetings around Galway. We're trying to set up a few structures for next season. But it's enjoyable. It's brilliant. And I love it. And you have to have a passion for it. But in terms of a job, I don't really understand I don't know where you have that time. It's just intense. That's the way the game is, I believe. And if you're trying to be successful, you have to put that energy in. And that's the way I feel. And sometimes I see in the, like, that's what I feel with some of the coaching courses, is that, you know, they don't tell people that really that it's unlike any other type of job that you're in. It's really, you have to have a passion for it, but it's your life, really. And you know, people on the street will come and give you their opinion. They'll tell you what to do, and you either embrace it and take it on the chin, or, you know, and if you don't do that, I don't know how you, from my point of view, you have to be all in.
One of the, I suppose one of the great, you mentioned the feedback and people coming up to you in the street and whatever, like, how does it feel going to a new club? And like, it would have been expected normally your first home game, there would have been like a big crowd, you know, there would have been that response that your first game at Cork was incredible, you know, the home match. And, you know, you have these impatient Galway fans like Johnny Ward and people like this who expect this and that. Like, are you getting to meet them and encounter them? Because you don't have that match night experience to, you know, get the vibe of the crowd and what people are thinking. But are you still getting enough of a sense of Galway and the potential and the interest that's there?
Well, absolutely, Dan, because I moved up here. You know, I'm living here. I want to be around the town of, and meeting people. And obviously, it would be fantastic if we could be more successful, could go up the table. But already, in a short period of time, you know, I met loads of people. You know, a lot of people wishing well, a lot of ex-players, you know, people, ex-sponsors in the club or sponsors in the club. So I've met lots of people. But, you know, for me, I'm in the community and you need to be here for that. Mm. You know what I mean? Because you have to show that you're serious about this. It would be fantastic if we could get crowds back. And certainly, you know, I think, you know, there would have been an impact from a crowd point of view, obviously, if crowds were allowed in. But look, at the moment, that's the way it is. Certainly, we hope for next season that will change. But, you know, at the moment, I'm out and about, and it's, you know, despite what Johnny Ward has been saying about me, everyone has been giving me great well wishes, and hope, you know, hopefully I can
try. What's Johnny Ward been saying here? Come on, Johnny, come on. You're on, we've got Johnny Ward now on the line here.
It was actually nice to meet after the game, the Shelburne game, and we did speak about how mad the game was, but we've had three games since you've come in and it's been ridiculously attacking football, really. And I suppose your problem has been that I would have said at Cork that you were quite direct. Maybe you're working with the players that you had, because at the moment with Galway, it's like it's very much used the pace that the team has, and it's everyone seems to be very excited by it. So maybe I was wrong.
Yeah, no, listen, you see, it's probably, look at lads, this period in the Cork scenario, as I call it, it was like 2 year periods. Like, you know, we took over a club that were on its knees. We know players, you know, we plucked a couple of guys like O'Sullivan from non-league football who we knew. And O'Sullivan, the first year, got 10 goals from play. He was a phenomenal player in the air. We played to his strengths. You know what I mean? Then we ended up with the Maguire, Dooley, Shepherd era, when we won the double and won the cup in 2016. And we were passing, moving, you know, with Oriel Park, beat Dundalk 3-0, were the champions. Phenomenal football team for those couple of years. But we were losing players. And then we ended up in the 2018-19 year, we brought Graham back from Scotland, Graham Cummins back from Scotland, whose strength was in the air. So we changed around. So we had different styles, and we were trying to build a team around the strengths of our team. At the moment in Galway is that, you know, I want to see my team attacking, being exciting. And even if you look at in Cork every year, if you look at the goals scored, we were always a very attacking side. Of course, you want to keep clean sheets. But it was probably that Dundalk were the sexier team. That was fine. I had no issue with that. But we were the team trying to stay with them and pull it up to them. And it was always tough going, but you know, we were doing our best, and the lads did brilliantly by winning two cups and qualifying for Europe every year. And like, you know, when people look back and, you know, you look at other teams at the time, the Rovers and these, they were 20, 25 points off us. But it just got to that stage where, you know, Dundalk had a phenomenal team and great players, but we had as well, because we wouldn't have won a double otherwise. But at the same time, you know, at the moment, I want our team to be exciting. I want them to play. We've a bit of pace in the team, and I'm trying to use that. So, you know, as I said, I'm trying to play to the strengths of the team, and I've always tried to do that. And so, you know, whatever box people put me into, I can't, you know, I can't do anything about that. All I have to do is do the best for the club I'm representing and try and get the team to win, because ultimately, you know, in professional football, it's about trying to win matches.
I suppose, like, considering where Cork were when you took over and the consistency that you had, it was a phenomenal time. What happened at the, like, why did it go wrong at the end? And this happened to so many managers where eventually, I don't know, is it that the players kind of need a different voice or just too many players have left? But look at where Cork are now, it's a long way removed from sort of the Caulfield era. So what went wrong at the end?
Well, I think, Johnny, the scenario is that, you know, we went from a team sixth or seventh in the table, you know, when we took over with five players on the books, to go into, in our first season, to the last game of the season, with the dog nearly doing the league, you know. And we never left that position afterwards, bar winning in 2017. So I think the problem we were having, that we were having it very difficult to retain players. You know, if you look at the period I was there, 13 players went to England. You know, and it wasn't that, you know, we all mentioned Maguire, Lennon went to Hull, but if you look at the book, like, we had Johan, Dooley, Ryan Delaney, all went to Rochdale. We just couldn't give them. And Rochdale's average crowd is 2,300. We have way better facilities than they had. We had European football, but they could double their wages if they're going to Rochdale. And Rochdale aren't a big club, but that's ultimately, and we had been very good at, if you look at, you know, we've been very good at identifying players to come to the club, like Beattie, Shepherd, Dooley, you know, all these guys that were out of contract who came to our club. But we were losing them. And then to find the diamonds was getting more difficult. So by the end of 2019, a lot of things had changed in the club. The vice chairman who founded Force, Pat Shine, had died in November after 2018, had a big effect in the club. The chairman stood down, the board changed. And really, they wanted to go in a different direction, because cost-wise, the club had gone from 214 to 219 in Europe every year. And, you know, that meant there was massive work needed to raise money, bring in more money, and they wanted to go in a different direction. I was trying to develop a new team, because the team was quite young. We had McLaughlin, we had McCarthy, Dan Casey brought in, Darragh O'Connor. So we had a lot of younger guys brought in, but the problem, I suppose, because success had been there, because we hadn't been in the top two the first third of the season, well, you know, there was pressure on. I understand that the club wanted to go a different way and the chairman wanted to go a different way. That's fine. You know, and at the end of the day, as I always said, I didn't want to be there if I wasn't wanted. And so the conversation was very short. And, you know, it was going to be more difficult year. And look at it. It's And if people come in to run a club, they want to change the way the club is, and they want to change the structures in the club. And they're ultimately the owners. That's their entitlement. And, you know, while I agree with what happened, ultimately, the way I felt is that if you're not wanted there, you might as well move on.
Just on that, how hard is that for a manager? Because, like, people lose their jobs and that's tough. But you're in a job in your hometown, effectively, where your adopted town, so much success. And for weeks and weeks and weeks, there's kind of negative coverage of Cork. And you can see that the team is kind of fading. And then you eventually lose your job. How hard is that to take for you and your family?
Well, it's probably very difficult for my family, because they've seen everything I've put into it. For me, it's probably, I'm a realist, and I know in football, you know, it's a results business. And, you know, there isn't what you call loyalty, you know, and at the end of the day, you just have to get the results. So that's the way it was. And I suppose no different than anywhere else, but particularly in Cork, because the club is so big in terms of you're competing with Munster Rugby, ultimately you're competing with the Hurling and Football Club, and Cork City were getting all the attention, because we were the number one club in the city, you know, because the footballers hadn't been doing well. The Hurlers were always there, thereabouts, but hadn't been winning all Ireland. We were the team that was perceived as the big club. So we were number one in the local papers, Examiner, The Echo, the three radio stations. We were like the in thing. So there wasn't so much coverage and so much coverage, which was absolutely fantastic, because that's where I wanted to get the club to. So the pressure was you. So from that point of view, you know, was it disappointed? Of course I was. You know what I mean? You know, but, you know, people may say, well, you know, if you're given more time, but look, that's football. I didn't, you know, as I said, and I've always said, if I wasn't required there and people want to make a change, and there was an element who wanted to make that change from the outside, that's the way it goes. I suppose what I was more disappointed was my backroom team, who really were incredibly loyal people. And really phenomenal people, you know, and, you know, they were all moved very quickly, which was disappointing, because they were 24/7 people, and you can't have success as a manager. I might get the glory for winning, but I would have done nothing with all those people. And, you know, John Carter came in, you know, really didn't get a chance. He wasn't really wanting, he was only stopgap. You know, Liam Kearney was was moved on. Incredible person. Lisa Fallon, you ended up with Chelsea in the women's game. Phenomenal person. Kevin Tatton, the SNC guy. He's manager of the Wexford Camogie team. All talented people, and they were all just dismissed and very quickly. And I felt I felt that they had no reason, because their heart was in the club and they were phenomenal people. Yes, they would have come in through me, but they all had been with the club. And I just felt that, you know, they would have kept structures and within the club, and they would have kept what I felt. There were so many changes, it was very difficult, you know. And then I feel with Neil coming in, then it was always going to be difficult when there's so many changes.
I must want to look forward rather than look back and not make this a big Cork thing. But there's one final thing. I mean, it's funny, you mentioned the 2016, 2017 team, and you can just reel them off. You know, it's always like Dooley, you know, Maguire, Shepherd. Like, the one thing that did strike me about the last year is that all of a sudden you didn't have that familiarity. Like, you had possibly quite a big squad, and I wonder, was that you're searching for those diamonds, as you mentioned, and you couldn't find them, and then you look for more, and at the end you were bringing in guys on loan from the UK just looking for something. And like, did you lose something there with that? You know, like, you have a sort of a continuity and a squad, and then you were sort of reaching around for something, and all of a sudden you end up with a lot of players but no real, you know, that not that 11, you know. And then that brings costs, I guess, with it as well and stuff, if you have a big enough squad.
Yeah, but there was a lot of talk about costs and stuff, Dan, and most of the fellas I got from the UK were free. We didn't pay them anything because the club over. That was the deals I'd done with my connections. You know, so deals with Rochdale, with Portsmouth, they were connections I had. So the players didn't cost us anything over. So there was a lot of myth there. But at the end of the day, if you look at the history, I was slow to bring fellas from across into our league because it's very difficult. Because I was able to pick. Like, remember, Dooley was a guy that no one wanted. Derry let him go, didn't want him. Shepherd was similar. Okay, Beattie, all right, came to us. Okay, he'd gone from Bowes to Sligo. We had picked up guys that you're saying that, you know, Ryan Delaney had come in. I got him from Nigel Clough and Burton. So, like,
even Sean McGuire wasn't particularly well.
No, Sean was a classic because no one wanted. You know, because he was just let go, and really he came to me on a non-contract. You know what I mean? But to be fair, you know, people say in hindsight, you know, that I turned his career around. All I did with Johnny McGuire was give him confidence and work with him, you know, on a training ground.
And play.
And then he came up and he played, and we worked on him and he got his confidence. And, you know, but the credit was to him because he put the work in. I only showed him the gate where I opened the gate for him to show him what he could do or what I could give him.
Well, did your own experience as a striker help him? Because maybe his confidence wasn't that high at the time, and he is brilliant in front of goal like you were.
Well, he was a lot better striker than I was, Johnny, can assure you.
You're both kind of older than the box sort of types as well, like.
Yeah, but, well, look, you could say that would it have helped? It may have helped because I know in front of goal, particularly with strikers, you need to have that confidence, and if they miss a few chances, you need to keep and persist with them. Do you know what I mean? But I would still say, like, you know, you talk about Stephen Dooley. You know what I mean? Again, incredible footballer, totally underrated. You know, we brought Kieran Sadler in, and Sadler was a really good player. But, like, Stephen Dooley was a magician. Look at our league in the 2017 team. You know, they won the first 21 of 22 games. Galway, funnily enough, was the team that drew with us. But Dooley's, if you look at the goals McGuire got and Shep, Dooley's creation was phenomenal. But he was, again, a guy with low confidence. Didn't believe in himself, and it was a phenomenal footballer. But to be fair, you know, it was one of those ones where it was that, I suppose, to answer your question, Dan, you are always looking to pick up guys around, and, you know, the quality of some of the guys that we brought in wasn't at the level that we had been. But I suppose that's why I felt that, you know, with the likes of Darrell Connor, these lads, I was going to try and rebuild the team. But it was difficult because when you lose a goal machine, like we had O'Sullivan for 2 years, McGuire came in then and made us a different team altogether, albeit with Dooley and Shepherd and these guys and Buckley coming from midfield. And then we'd say, you know, Graham came back, initially did well, found it difficult then, you know what I mean? And obviously, you know, you're looking to get the guy who will get you 15 or 20 goals, which could make a challenge. So it is difficult. So, and ultimately, I wouldn't have gone to UK much through my previous 5 years, but you're always trying to see, can you find the guy? So it's, It's all a good learning experience, lads. You know?
I suppose the criticism that's definitely fair is that you did a big squad, and you did seem to like you seem to have seven or eight right backs alone at one point. And was that one thing that you just maybe had you spent too much on players that obviously couldn't play? Or that would be something that I would have reflected on, that you did an awful lot of players, you can only pick 11, I suppose.
No, we did, but the problem, Dan, is that at the end of the day, we had a number of players on contract. You know what I mean? Like, we had a couple of lads in from England, Smith and Gillen, these guys. They weren't, yes, we put them in comedy. They weren't, their wages were cut from across. Young Gary Boylan had been on a serious injury. His contract would start when he played. So obviously he wasn't, you know, so there was a lot of myth in terms of what was there. And there was, you know, there is stuff that was put out that wasn't correct. But look, that's, you know, sometimes people need to justify what they've done. You know, I'm not getting involved in that. But like, all I know is that behind the scenes, that basically what we did, what the structure was, what we were trying to do, and ultimately at the end of the day, you know, you move on. You know, people don't like your face. They want to be changed, and that's fine. That's the way it goes.
You mentioned so to Galway, and you mentioned like yesterday you're having meetings about next season, and like. So what have you inherited there? I mean, I suppose you probably have an idea of Galway from outside, from going there over the years. You know, the club that has been more time in the second division than the top division in recent times. What have you found on the ground compared to maybe what your expectation is? And what are those structures and things that you actually need to do with next season?
Well, first of all, then the team is underachieved. You know, you come into a club and there's, you know, 25 guys training. And they haven't won a match. So ultimately you can, you know, listen and, you know, people can blame other people or they can say, you know, maybe Alan didn't do this. At the end of the day, the team didn't win the match out of 8 games, you know, so you don't need to be a genius to see they didn't win a match before COVID or since COVID, okay? So you have to look at the squad and then look at the lads and say, well, why is that happening here? You know, fitness levels, have guys lost form, guys lost confidence, and so you have to go in and put your stamp on it. And that's just so that was the immediate thing on the pitch, and increase the training sessions as well, you know what I mean? So which I've done. And off the pitch then is trying to put structures in, you know, that you know, there's lots of stuff in the medical side, you know, that need to tidy up. There's lots of stuff regarding injured players. You know, lots of stuff regarding answers in the club, who decides this, who decides that. So there's things like that I've been working on, trying to make sure to streamline things that everyone is accountable. And even with my own management team, you know, there's a lot of talk that I changed the whole management structure. Why would I? If there's people within the management team who are loyal to Galway United and are passionate about the club, why would you do that once they're good people? So for me, it was about leaving everything in situ until the end of the season and see over the next 10 weeks how we get on. But certainly, you know, if you're asking me with a view to next season, do I expect things to be much different and much improved? I certainly do. And that's why I'm doing all this work in the background as well, just to make sure that from next season where, you know, everything is in place and that there's no excuses, because, you know, I believe that, you know, you take out all the ambiguity and then you keep things so everyone knows their role and their jobs, and, you know, then you have a chance.
What's achievable this season? It's funny, the first division table, it's incredible, really. It's almost like if people watch the Tour de France or something, it's like a peloton, but it's at the front. You know, they're all at the front and they're sort of, and all of a sudden, if you can get a bit of momentum going, the teams are dropping points. So if you can get a run together, like you're not a million miles off that playoff picture at all, really, are you?
Well, I suppose the most important thing, Dan, was that I had to go into a club and see could we win a match. And even to see the lads after Friday night's match in Athlone in the dressing room afterwards was like a relief for them. You know, they were all smiling. And then we go to UCD, a different little game, and after the game, you could see them come off the pitch and they're all, you know, and it's trying to create that winning mentality, because when you do get beaten every week, it's the same as winning. You start winning every week, you get momentum, you know, and even the other night, keeping the clean sheet and, you know, we were defending at times. The period in the first half, just on half time, UCD got 4 corners in a row in the last 2 minutes of half, and they were really, really difficult balls to put in, the brilliant balls to put in, and we defended them brilliantly. And it's a bit like, you know, sometimes people can hide and shy away and say if it wasn't my man, if it was their man. but you have to stand up and be counted. And ultimately, you know, I see the nucleus of a very good team. Okay. There's an opportunity for everyone to put their stake in for next season. But at the same time, you know, let's be honest, does the team need a few players? Of course it does, to be better. And but it's my job over the next 8 weeks to get the best out of the lads. So, you know, we've had just two good results. And we go into Rovers B on Friday night. Again, a very tricky game. But after two wins, you hope the lads will have that confidence to go and play again and keep that momentum going. But, you know, wait.
See where it takes. So you've been suitably diplomatic there. Sort of see where it takes. But it's a wide open league, though. I mean, that's the thing. Even take Galway out of it, it's actually sort of, it's going to be exciting either way, whatever happens. I don't know how you've established the hierarchy, or is it hard to figure out, you know, the stronger teams, or is it really as reflective of the league table position that it's that open?
Well, I think it's the type of league that anyone can beat anyone. I suppose a bit more different, like in the Premier Division, you know, when Dundalk and Cork were there, we're winning most of the games, or Rovers now at the moment, and you know, in the First Division, I actually think a lot of teams are quite equal. You know, I think on their day, and I think what's reflecting that now is that, you know, 3 weeks ago, Cavendish looked were going to run away with it. They're dragged back in. Drogheda are a brilliant team. I saw Cork beating Longford a couple of weeks ago. Longford had the previous week had nearly knocked City out of the cup. Bray was a nil-all game up here. And so, and then you're looking at, you know, Cork have come and almost their players. Rovers B have caused a few problems. Wexford have caused a few problems. So at the same time, it's a bit like, I see anyone could beat anyone. If we're halfway through the season and we're in the position we were in, I'd say yes, with 8 games to go, it's trickier because there's still a good gap there. But, you know, the most important thing is that we put 2 wins under our belt, and I want to get more wins before the end of the season.
I suppose as well, you've gone from like one club city to another one club city, but that's kind of where the comparisons end. Cork's obviously a bigger city than Galway, but just speaking from somebody who's followed the club, I think my first game was in 1996. Never seen them win anything, literally nothing. They won the cup in 91, your buddy Johnny Glynn getting the goal. That's all Galway United have ever won. Produced great players from the West, but you know, dreams of going to Europe, whereas Longford Town, Sligo Rovers, some of these small provincial towns, not to mind Dundalk. Where do you see the potential of clubs? So I know Galway, you mentioned Cork. Galway has a lot of competition in terms of other sports, Connacht rugby, footballers and hurlers, very strong. But is that something that you're kind of conscious of, that there is a big kind of, the ceiling is quite high?
Yeah, well, I think, Johnny, you're right in saying that, but competition in Cork is as intense as in Galway. Well, the bigger problem Galway have had is there's lots of Galway lads don't play for Galway. And have left over the last number of years because the club hasn't been doing well. So that's something straight away you have to rectify. You know, and you have to see that, you know, there's guys walking out of this city at 19 and 20 and they're going elsewhere. Mm. You know, so, you know, and in the greater hinterland, you know, we have players playing with other clubs that potentially really should be playing with a successful Galway United. But because of where we are, they're not here. And that's something that I have to try and rectify. So from that point of view, I, you know, as I said to you, I want to base what I call a greater Galway team. Okay, obviously you might bring in some outside players, but ultimately that's what I want to create here. And I see great potential. But it's my job to convince guys not to leave Galway, to stay here or come back. And that's what I'm going to be working very hard on. But obviously, if I can show that we're going to be successful, or you know, the pathway looks like we're going to be successful, well, then you have a chance of enticing guys back. I accept that, you know, sometimes money comes into it. But at the end of the day, you know, as I always say, if a fellow wants to leave you for 50 quid and go elsewhere, that's his choice. All you can do is show what you're trying to do, how the training is going to be done, how the structure is going to be done. And that's at the moment, like, so from that point of view, I'm trying to put structures in place that for next season, you know, we'll be training properly. And what I mean by that, we'll be training all the time. You know, we're with a proper recovery, but we'll do double sessions, and you know, and giving the fellas the opportunity that look at this is where we're at. I believe we can go and be successful. Here's the pathway that I see. If you want to be part of that, well, good. Oh, it may not work, Johnny, but it won't be from the lack of hard work and trying. But at the same time, because I believe if you work hard and put the structure in place, I think you have a chance. So that's really where it's at. So I would certainly hope that, you know, if I was talking to you this time next year, that you'd see.
I hope we're still talking this time next year. No,
yeah, well, we hope we are. I'm sure we will be. But I just hope that sort of we have a team that you'd be saying that's a really passionate Galway United team. The score goals are exciting. But ultimately, the team, you know, whether it's 20, 22 players, that the bulk of them are from the greater Galway area. Mm. That's what I'm trying to achieve, you know.
It's not so much make Galway great again, just make Galway great. No. Yeah, I don't
yeah, but you see, but what you don't see, like, and I always say this, and I don't want to say, like, people make a big thing about age, and, you know, it doesn't matter. The most important thing is to work hard. You have to adapt your game. You have to change your styles. You have to adapt to what you have. And sometimes at the moment, people think, oh, you get a pro license or you get an A license. There's your badge. Go, you're a great coach. No, it's grand moving dots around on the board. When you get on the training pitch and or you're playing in a match and there's two defenders standing in front of the way you thought the ball was going to be, you have to know how to get around it. And you have to adapt it properly and play the different systems. But, like, I suppose, you know, everything is about adapting and learning. But, you know, the way it is that when I was growing up and when I started my career, coming up to Galway in the late 80s, all through the 90s, and I know you started following Galway in 96, but up to they won the League Cup in 97. Galway were always 95% Galway United, Galway United people.
Yeah.
Players from the area. Hard team, really good players. And if you like, for a long number of years since, players have left, haven't really played with the club, and they've had little spells, you know, got to a League Cup final, but had little spells, but really have done nothing for a long, long time. And I just feel that opportunity, if I can put everything in place, I just feel that opportunity could be there, that you could turn the club around. That's what I'm here for, lads. Look, at the end of the day, if I'm talking to you next year and we're halfway down the table, I probably won't be here. Let's yeah. on this picture, you know what I mean? And that's the way that I go, and I understand that.
Halfway down the Premier Division table.
Well, look, if you were there, you take that. You know, but certainly we're happy on the first division to everyone. You know, I understand the way it is. So you know, so I've no illusion, but I believe in what I'm doing. I believe in hard work, and I believe in having good people around you. That's what we want.
Well, listen, John, it's been great to have you on. I have to say, on behalf of our listeners, we're all looking forward to Johnny Ward becoming your number one fan.
I did have one last question for him, Dan. It's a very brief one.
Oh, you have one last question? Okay.
Stephen Kenny.
Phone number.
Stephen Kenny, John, and just briefly, to start, how challenging is it for him now to go into Slovakia?
Do you know what, Johnny? The biggest problem nowadays is that right from the start, you're under so much pressure, okay? And before a ball was even kicked, you know, there's lots of people criticising Stephen. Lots of people, you know, were supporting Mick. Ultimately, at the end of the day, lads, let's call a spade a spade. Watching the international team for the last 10 years, we have never been brilliant. We have never scored loads of goals. We've never been a real attacking team. We've been dogged, played off set pieces. And that's where we've been at. You cannot go in at Stephen and implement a system within a couple of weeks. You just can't do that. Unfortunately, modern football, people want results straight away. And, you know, he obviously, in the last two games, you can see he was bringing the guys he had from the 21 with him because they knew what he was about. But the step up to senior football, particularly for Ali Mead and these guys who aren't regulars at the club, is very difficult. So if you're asking me, do I think Stephen can do a job and do a job very well with Ireland? Absolutely, I do. The problem isn't in modern football. It's all about time. And, you know, we have the big game against Slovakia. And if we don't qualify, well, then he's going to be under enormous pressure because there's a brigade out there that want them out who never really want them. And that's just the way, and that's how you handle that. So it is difficult. But at the same time, the way I feel about it is that when people talk about managers that were there previously or Nick and whatever, yeah, they will. But, like, we came third in the group. We were no world beaters. It wasn't that, you know, we were third in the group that we were always going to be third in. You know, we're in the playoffs. You know, so, you know, Stephen deserves his opportunity. I believe he'll do well. I think he's done very well with the 21s. But for me, it's just hoping that he'll get that time to do that. Because it's you know, as I said, there is a certain element out there that they never really want them, and they're quite vocal. And that's difficult in, you know, I think the big thing nowadays, and you can see this, lads, is that in the media, it's that, you know, everyone wants to get an angle You know, everyone wants to have the good stories, and patience is kind of the game. You know, that's football management. We all know that now.
So we look forward to Johnny Ward being patient with you. Absolutely patient.
If we win 3-0 every week. Thanks for meeting, John.
Very good. Good to see you, lads.
Thanks, John. See you soon.
Don't forget to visit lottoland.ie/sportsbook, where you'll find all the odds and weekly special bets for the SSE or Tricity Premier Division. This week, with the return of the Premier League, Lottoland is offering two price boosters. The first of which is a combo bet of Premier League and the LOI. Back Bowes, Rovers, Liverpool and Spurs from 9-2 to sixes. And you can back Filippo Giovagnoli's Dundalk to win and Shells not to score, boosted from 5-4 to 7-4. That is an attractive bet if you believe in the Italian project. Visit lottoland.ie/sportsbook. In JC, we trust, Dan. You know, 9 goals in 3 games. I take it all back. And in fairness to him, we're actually playing. I watched the UCD
Johnny
game.
Ward. Johnny
very,
Ward.
Very poor stream. But like,
Johnny
it was exciting.
We've all
football.
Seen, a lot of us have seen the photograph. We've seen the photograph of you with JC like together.
Well,
it's almost like I don't know what it's like. It's like Boris and the DUP together or something. It's like, you know, they might
poor comparison.
Poor analogy. But it, like, you know, in the past, like, is it just a marriage of convenience? Like, do you actually really get on that well, or is it just because you have a common goal, and as a result, you're going to get on.
See, this is the point. I met John Caulfield in a place that honours another legend, Obama Plaza. And this was before that game he mentioned where Galway ended that ridiculous run, like 21 games or something they were unbeaten, or 20 at that. 20 games they'd won in a row at that time. And they were like, they weren't a million to one to just win every game that season. And I met him in the Obama Plaza, and I just said, would you mind posing for a photo to promote the game for the programme on Friday, blah, blah, blah. He was absolutely brilliant. He bought me over straight away, and he has an infectious love for the game, and that hasn't changed. But one thing I will say is that as much as I didn't really enjoy watching Cork, and did unravel at the end, and he made mistakes, no doubt, there is probably, you know, an argument that he does work with the players he has, and at the moment he's working with Galway United, and they're actually playing very good, very attacking football. What, ask any UCD, it's actually a good crowd in Belfield on Monday night for a Monday in Belfield, even though there was nobody there. It actually had this feeling that it was a real game in Belfield. Pat Dolan was there. And
just to be clear, there was a good crowd at the game on Monday, even though there was no one there.
But you know, it was a good crowd for Belfield on a Monday night. You know the way you get like a few passes, and you will get a few smatter, and the subs are there and all that. So it wasn't that bad. But Galway were brilliant. Right. And it's just, if we win all our games, I think we'll win the league. And I don't put that past us at the moment. We just have 8 games to go.
Were you having a chat with Pat? The great Pat.
Oh, as I said, sorry, I didn't make the game. I asked for a pass from Galway, and they'd all used them. So I watched a dodgy stream of it, which seemed to go black every time we had an attack or scored. But exciting times, and the run that Galway have now is actually very favourable. Shamrock Rovers, hopefully Zeffy's on the bench. That's at the weekend, but then they've a good run of games, and like Drogheda lost to Cove, but then battered Cabinteely, who've now lost 3 kind of quickly. Longford don't seem that great. UCD were battered by us, despite the fact they're 6 points ahead of us. Anything could happen then.
It could. I mean, it's definitely a wide open race, I guess, you know. So we'll see how it proceeds. But let's hear from Ronan Finn, perhaps. It may well be that the Premier Division title race is more clear cut, although I suspect a player of his experience will not speak in those terms. So, let's hear from Ronan.
Ronan Finn, how are you getting on?
Not too bad, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. It must be, in terms of your career, this must be right up there with the most exciting kind of time in it. You've had a long career, but I don't know. How do you sum up after beating Bowes on Saturday? You're obviously on the cusp of a big game in Europe, and you're top of the table.
Yeah, I suppose, listen, at the moment things are going well, but we're not getting too far ahead of ourselves. You know, football's like, it can unravel so fast. And listen, we're managing games quite well. We've a good return from points. So listen, no, things are going well. We're training hard, but like genuinely, like nobody's getting carried away. No one's like thinking too far ahead.
You say all the right things.
Well, the group is very strong. Trust me, it is very, very strong. But we haven't won a league. So I think it's disrespectful to be thinking anyways beyond the next game. And for us, genuinely, Cork on Saturday is such a huge game for the football club, because we just got to keep momentum. Momentum in football is very important.
Well, this is the strange thing. How well have Rovers actually played this season in terms of your potential? Because as you say, you're managing games and you're winning games, but you're kind of scraping through games to an extent. And obviously, you've maybe slightly kind of ridden your luck in the odd game here or there. But is there more in this Rovers team, I suppose, put it a nicer way?
Say they take the 0-0 with Pat, for example. I thought the first half was as good as we've probably played in terms of, but the game was 0-0 at halftime. But we played some really, really nice stuff. Should have been going in maybe two up, but we weren't. Teams are definitely like dropping off us, you know, trying to, concede. We're not getting, you know, many chances maybe in the last couple of games because teams are defending so well and so deep. So it's up to us as a football team to get around that, to respect other teams are going to do that. And for us to now find another way to score. Teams aren't really going toe-to-toe with us as of late. But listen, that's part of football and you've got to find another way to score.
Is that frustrating that essentially, I don't know, half the time, maybe two-thirds of the time, you are playing a team that's effectively parking the bus?
No, because I think it's a respect, to be honest. Like, we've got to this stage on the back of playing some really, really good stuff. And I think you kind of, as a group, we looked at it and said, listen, teams weren't doing this to us like 12 months ago, but they are now, and they're doing it for a reason. And the reason is we've been playing some really nice stuff and, carving out a lot of chances. So now it's come to a stage where teams have changed their game to play against us, and now it's up to us to find another way. So you take it, you know, as a player, you can't get frustrated because part of the game is defending, and you got to respect that the other team may come to tally and be happy to take a 0-0, for example. But for us as a group, we've got to be better and we've got to work on that. We have been working on it because over the last couple of games, it showed that teams may just drop off. And for us as a group, we've got to be able to come beyond that.
Ronan, like I was listening to your manager speak after the game at the weekend, and like you're one of the players in that dressing room that has won a league before. You know what it takes. And as you said, like you've got a reputation as a really good footballing side. But is there also that satisfaction sometimes and winning that game where you just have to grind it a bit? You know, that you know coming off the pitch, you know, on Saturday, yeah, like we've worked for this as a group, and it may not have been in the way that your team has met its reputation, but you know as players that was big.
That was a hard fought and win the weekend. Like it was a really, really tough game. I felt it coming off the pitch that you earned your 3 points on the back of both. Those are good side. They're on merit. And, you know, we 100% respected them. You know, we know they're a good side. We know they're dangerous. We've learned from the derbies in the last maybe 3 years, 4 years, that they're different games. And I know it might sound silly, but unless you're playing them and playing a lot of them, they are different games to what? Just another League of Ireland game is about. And maybe 18 months ago, we were trying to maybe play out in the back and being a bit naive, inviting a high press and getting done. Derbies are about winning. And at this stage of the season, it was a huge 3 points up for grabs. And we probably didn't play as much as we played in, say, the European game the week before, you know, where it was a lot of playing out from the back, patient build-up. Against Bohemians, you know, we were happy to go direct. We were happy to go Darren. We were happy to play off second balls and be up in the game. It was like, I remember playing under Michael Neal, and that was a really, you know, a tactic to an extent that you play higher up the pitch, you get the ball forward and you pick up second balls and you manage the game in the final third. I think when we managed the game in the final third, we actually still played some nice football, especially in the first half. We got our goal. Second half, we definitely maybe sit back, but I would say we rolled our luck. They had a couple of chances, they had a couple of shouts for penalties, but other than that, I don't think Alan really had a massive save to make in the game, and ultimately we won the game 1-0.
Like, yeah, even that early goal, I mean, you've had some games recently where not getting that has almost built pressure on you within the game, you know. That must have been a discussion before, was it, just to really start strongly? It's funny you mentioned that about the high press at the time. Like, I'm thinking to the, I assume, are you thinking of that game in Tallaght where Lee Grace gets sent off and you had, like, you, you invited pressure maybe at the start of that game by playing out your own half, and you just mixed it up a bit basically here.
Maybe the game in Daly Mount where we give away two penalties in the first 15 minutes. Listen, whether it's us as a group learning that the derby is just essentially a slightly different game and you have to manage the game. I think it comes with experience from the group that, you know, we're managing the games better. The last four derbies, we've won four of them, and like probably all by small margins. But listen, we've come out on top, and that's ultimately the difference. Derbies aren't memorable games. They're never football and classics. They're never two teams sitting off each other, letting each other have the ball. It's about two teams really wanting 3 points regardless of how they get it. And for us, that was, you know, that was evident last weekend. We managed the game. And ultimately we came out on top.
Just in terms of this year's title race, right, it's obviously very different to any other one because, you know, normally you'd be coming off the pitch on Friday with the cheers of the crowd, and, you know, there'd be a different type of energy maybe around it. Like, are you still aware, though, of the sense of pressure that's building? Not pressure, but, you know, anticipation that's building amongst fans? Or in a strange way, are you insulated from it a bit because you're not, like, you're not coming off the pitch every week? You're not hearing the chance of things aren't going well or whatever. Like how are you finding it, this closed doors experience? Because it's still big, it's still a medal, it's still everything, but it must be a different type of experience in some strange way.
Of course it is. Listen, we all want fans at games. We all love, you know, the South Stand now, the energy they bring us. And the fan, like, I mean, one of the last games I remember before lockdown was the Dundalk game, and it was just both an unbelievable occasion in terms of numbers of attendees, but also the game itself was a very technical, high-level football match, and it was a great spectacle for League of Ireland. On the flip side of that, like you said, there's still everything on the line. Nothing changes. There's still a medal. There's still, European, like, Champions League football at the end of, potentially, if you are, whoever wins league, that's all remains the same. So, listen, we all want fans there, but you can't get, you need to get over that, because, you know, if you're using that as an excuse, everyone else can use that as an excuse. Nothing changes for us. You just got to manage it. And I think we've coped quite well. We've been managing games, and I think the derby again was another example where we just, you know, we saw it out. Listen, whether fans were there or not, whether they would have helped us, they could have got frustrated the way we were playing, to be honest, that we weren't pushing on. We weren't looking for the second goal. As players, we were probably quite content to go, okay, well, 1-0 up, come break us down. Maybe if fans were there in the background, they maybe not be as acceptable as that, and they'd have been pushing us forward, and who knows, listen, it could have been a different game. But in the context, no fans, you have to deal with it the way you deal with it.
This sounds like slightly stalkerish, but I did take notice of you coming off the pitch on Saturday, and you were like, I think it really gave you a massive satisfaction, you personally, that you just got over the line, and also that you'd gotten over another close game against Bowes. You've turned it around against Bowes, and I'm contrasting this to you when you joined Rovers and it wasn't going so well and you left Dundalk. Was there ever any regret that you'd done what you did when things weren't going so well early on and Dundalk were battering you in games, beat you 5-2 in Tala, and Ronan Finn like looks like an idiot because he's left Dundalk for this?
I got huge satisfaction winning that game last week. On the back of it was, you know, a top of the table clash between two Dublin clubs. And it was a big game. You can't get away from the fact that, listen, we are coming to the business end of the season, and it was a big game. So I make no bones about that. It was a big game. Huge 3 points for us. Now we've left that behind and we're preparing for Cork. On the other players 11, not at all. I mean, never once have I regretted that decision, purely on the basis that I knew leaving, that wasn't going to be something that was going to happen overnight, because, listen, I knew the group in Dundalk was very, very strong. But I also knew from speaking to the gaffer, to McPhail, to Glenn, that the group, it wasn't going to happen overnight. It was a project that was in the pipeline, that they would, listen, nothing, like the club that where it was to when I joined to where it is now, is like, it's a really different dressing room. The manager has signed unbelievably well, but listen, it takes time, and the dog were so strong. You got to respect that at that time, and they still are a very, very strong group. So, I mean, for me leaving, it was never going to be instantaneously. I knew, you know, you're going to have to be waiting. But listen, I'm still waiting. Listen, no one's getting ahead of ourselves. We're far from there yet. Still a long way to go. Winning the cup last year was a real plus, a real bonus for the group. You know, it definitely gave us that confidence to, gives you that taste also of silverware, of winning. And that spreads into the group, and all of a sudden you're bouncing back into pre-season kind of with that hunger to go again. And like, that's in the group, you know, because if it wasn't in the group, the manager, like, he's so astute, he'd pull it up on it straight away, like, thinking you're better than you are, thinking you're ahead of yourself. There's none of that in the group, genuinely. Because none of us have, like, as a group, we haven't won the league. You know, we've won the cup, but we can't suddenly think smelling ourselves, because still a long way to go, and you end up looking a fool at the end of it.
Well, yeah, we definitely don't want you smelling yourselves, but what's been that change, though? Because you've gone so many games against Bowes where you've shot yourself in the foot, and you mentioned the penalties, red cards, maybe something's going against you. I think it was like 7 games out of 8 they won. Now you've gone to beating Bowes regularly. You beat Dundalk on penalties. You've gone behind in games a lot and won. What's changed? Because there just seems to be a maturity that doesn't actually go with the fact that you haven't won the league.
I suppose if you look at the group, the age of the, you know, the players in the group, I think everybody's of a good age. You know, there's we've got the kind of first division sides. That's a great model for bringing young lads through. But the first team, the squad that we have is of a good age. They're definitely of good experience, and definitely I think winning the cup last year gives players that confidence. Maybe beyond last year, before that, players hadn't got it, maybe a senior medal, but now all of a sudden you have an FAI Cup, and you know you want more of it, which also you've earned that. You know, I think we worked hard that day in the cup final, thought we'd a better side, and definitely I think coming up against the Dock on that day, beating them, you know, ultimately it was on penalties, but I thought we had a better team, and it definitely gave us that confidence. Then we skipped into pre-season, we started the season really well. But listen, I can't get ahead of it. I can't say too much because there's still a long, long way to go.
Yeah, last season, obviously, you had a big lead. But this season, in terms of, you know, the way the season has gone, you've drawn 2 games. What can go wrong? Because everyone's expecting, you know, after the game on Saturday, people are just saying, well, they're 5 points ahead. Dundalk are further back. Like, there just doesn't seem to be that complacency in the team. And you've massive strength and depth as well.
Yeah, I think from outsiders looking in, it's the easy assessment maybe to say, okay, you know, we're 5 points clear, you know, they should just go on and win the league. I don't think it's never that easy, because as the group, yes, we are a strong group, but I don't think we're that strong that we can not show up to it, up to every game. You know, you don't show up to a game in this league and you think you're better than you are, you won't get 3 points. So, for example, take Cork this weekend, like, we'll do genuinely the exact same homework for this game as we do for the, say, the Milan game on Thursday, you know, whatever it is, 6 days later. To be fair, it's come from management the right way down that we just don't, as a group, if you start thinking you're better than you are, you know, that's where you start falling, and it hasn't happened yet this season. And, you know, the group is strong, you know, we've been developing over the last few years to get to this stage. So, you know, it can all be undone very quickly. But listen, the main thing is that you treat it as such an old cliche, but it's the next game. You look at the next game.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can sense that that's the mode. And I suppose the games are spaced out a bit more as well this year. You know, we don't have that sort of 3 games a week mode, so you can probably concentrate. But listen, and I know that this year, mode, it's funny, I see Rovers there are still obviously advertising a big programme for the Milan game, and there's a big push. But I guess as players, like, you have a big game coming up normally, you have people on to you about tickets and stuff like that. You actually don't have that. Like, you know, this time, it's not in your head in the way that it might have been in normal circumstances.
Yeah, because I suppose a huge game on the horizon. Listen, you can't get away from the fact that the Milan game is a huge game. Genuinely, I don't want to sound boring, but the group hasn't been spoken about. But you're right, yeah. You won't have people ringing you saying, listen, can you get me a ticket? If I have family members going wrong, can you get us a mascot from Latin's nephew? Whatever, yeah. So that's things like that actually is taken away. Whether it's a good thing, whether it's a bad thing, I suppose that's football, isn't it? You come up to a cup final, the FAI Cup final last year, you have your phone, listen, can you get me a ticket? It's a 50,000 seat, I'd get your own ticket. You
know what I mean? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, Ron, calm down.
No, but that's guys like your friend of mine who wouldn't traditionally come on a Friday, but listen, that's football. They'd all have showed up next week against Milan. They'll all show up for the cup final. But you're right, that element is taken away, and it will be, listen, when that game comes, it will be, I'm playing in European games where there is massive crowds and you really do feel that energy, but now this next Thursday when it comes around will be slightly different.
Go ahead, Dan, sorry.
No, I was going to say, Ronan, just in terms of your own, you might have been asking the same question, Johnny. Ronan, in terms of your own development and your second spell at Rovers, like, you would have come to the club as a midfielder, you know, and it would have been very much viewed as a midfielder, and now you've evolved in this sort of right wing back role. Like, how have you found that sort of transition? I mean, I think one of the first times you might have played it would have been against Michael Duffy for Dundalk, and people thought it was something for a particular game, but actually it's become a bit more of a regular thing now. Like, how do you actually enjoy the football challenge of it?
Yeah, listen, obviously, traditionally, I've always been a midfielder. I still class myself as a midfielder. But I suppose the way my body is, it would allow me to play wing-back. But it also then helps us maybe get more players into the team. I think if you look at Jack and Borky, and technically, probably, it'd be fair to say, the two best footballers in Ireland. So having them in the team, in their preferred positions, and me playing right wing back, it's something that, listen, as a, you know, as playing for the club, you've got to do, because to be playing in the team, that's the be all and end all. You want to be in the side. So, I mean, traditionally, yeah, I would have always played midfield regardless of age or whatever. But I can, because my body allows me to play wing back, the manager's spoken to me on it. And he feels that I could still, you know, be very beneficial to the team from that role. And then, listen, when the time comes, if it comes that I step back into the middle, that's no problem. But at the moment, I'm enjoying wing back. You know, it's, you do get a lot of ball. You play forward and you see the pitch in front of you. It's definitely a different aspect, but something that I've grown to enjoy. And, you know, people, like, if it's Joey or Lee behind me, you know, they talk me through the game and they definitely give me a hand, because sometimes, you know, you could go rogue or go, you know, wandering. But at that position, you need to be careful.
I'm just conscious, like, I know it's Rovers are like a full-time club, but I know you're 33 in December. I know you've always had an eye on sort of life after football, I guess, and stuff. And you're still doing your bit with GoCar, right? You're still, as much as it's a full-time thing, you're still keeping your eye on the other side of things, yeah?
Yeah, it's something that, I suppose, when I was 25, I kind of... mad now that I'm saying that now, but when I was 25, 26, when I signed for Dundalk, part of the deal was that I was going up to Dundalk on the pretense that I'd get work. And listen, it just didn't materialize the year that was that happened. And you know, I think it was the Europa League, and how successful it was. No, it wasn't, it was the year before that. But it was still a very, you know, I took it that year and I just said, right, I'll play full time for another year. And on the back of, we then had a crazy year the next year in terms of how busy it was. But then when I was 28 then, and I spoke to Steve McFair, and I said, listen, you know, this is something that I really need to think about, because all of a sudden, you know, you're 28, you're 29, you're 30, you're 31. And, you know, the end is, as much as you don't want to admit it, like, for other players, you know, everybody's body is different, but you've got to be honest, it's not a million miles off. And all of a sudden, I'd done my degree in UCD, but that was when I was 20. So, and many graduates have come through UCD between now and then, you know, so all of a sudden you could be going into a market of when you're 34, 35, and yeah, you've had a great career and you've had great experiences, but you're going into a business world with no experience. You're going in competing against graduates who are fresh out of college, or you're going in with people who are maybe of the same age but have a massive experience behind them and dealing with whatever industry they were in. So it was just something for me that was important, but also it was something that I didn't want jeopardizing my football. So in fairness, Jonathan the club chairman. I had a great relationship with Jonathan before I before I went to Dundalk. I had a brilliant relationship with Jonathan and all, and you know, the lads and behind the scenes at the club. So when I was coming back, I spoke to Jonathan, and Jonathan, there was a role within GoCar. So GoCar is owned by Europcar, and Jonathan's general manager. And it was, you know, I haven't looked back, to be honest. It's still, I'm still in the role now, thankfully, and I'm enjoying it. It's nothing that it doesn't take away from me football. Obviously, with Jonathan, you know, being my boss, he gives me that bit of leeway. But on the flip side, that I can't take a piss, because you do have a role here. You've got responsibility within the job that you need to whatever it is, but a different weeks, being different challenges, but you have to do your job as well. So it's a bit of give and take. And listen, I haven't, Jonathan's been quite happy with me progress within the company, and I'd like to think he's been happy enough with the football as well. So no, it's gone well. I enjoy it. It's great. It's a good role for me.
But what are you actually doing, and like, how do you manage it then? Is it just sort of, because obviously I suppose, again, just normally you're talking Friday, Monday, Friday, and the fixture list has been a bit different. This year has been a bit different. So like, do you sort of manage your hours accordingly, I suppose, around that?
Yeah, like, I suppose on the back of a lot of people are working from home anyway. So within the company, you know, I'm in the office now, but listen, it's quiet because a lot of people are still working from home. So now, like, generally, listen, Monday's always a difficult day to get into the office because it's a double session. Tuesday, you would be in the office in the afternoon. Wednesday, you'd be off, so you'd be in the office all day. Thursday, you'd be in training in the morning, in the office in the afternoon. Friday, you would always take off because of a game. So between them hours, you know, I'd always pretty much get what needs to be done. So I'd be out on the road a lot as well. I'd be dealing with, so GoCars, looking for, say, new locations. That would be my area. I would be out speaking to different hotels, different shopping centres. We try to push it from a commercial end, speaking to management companies in a private housing estate, saying, listen, GoCar will here provide you a private vehicle for your residents. Whether it's,
by the way, we're playing Milan next week as well.
Yeah. But that's it, you know what I mean? And the football, to be fair, it would break down a few barriers. And all of a sudden, if you happen to meet somebody who likes football, and, you know, they may follow Rovers, they may follow the League of Ireland. So all of a sudden you have that common ground. And it does, it's a nice end, because sometimes you're going in cold, but all of a sudden if they're a League of Ireland fan and you can have that rapport, it does make things a little bit easier. But to be fair to the, you know, to the team here, they do give me a bit of leeway, because, you know, it's not always that easy. Whether it, before it was two games in a week, or European football, you're missing time here and there. You'd always have that bit of cover. But listen, at the end of the day, you do have a role as well that you can't take the piss. So it's a bit of give and take.
Yeah, because I guess I'm just thinking, like, your UCD class as such, or UCD team. I mean, you do see it now. Like, there's a lot of ex-League of Ireland players that are actually doing very well in the business world, or doing bits and bobs and different things, or you can see the likes of Dave O'Connor at Shells in a very different role and stuff. Like, it is a younger league now. So are you actually quite conscious of that, of seeing what other lads your age are doing in life? You know, is that something that you actually would be actually mindful of?
Well, no, because I still feel physically I'm fine. If I was physically not fine and I was starting to see people run past me, or if I was looking at the stats that we'd get after each week of games and my stats were lower and lower, then I'd be starting to panic on, right, the end is coming for me. I don't think I'm there yet, because the stats will back me up. So, but when that time comes, yeah, you will, because, like, listen, all you know is football, and you've done it for so many years. Listen, everybody has to retire, and that time comes, it will be a tough day. But at the moment, my body's allowing me to still continue love what I do every day, you know, training, you know, you do feel privileged. You don't take it for granted, because when you were younger, you know, you go play for Fingal, it was full-time football, you go back to bed for the afternoon. like, that's what it was, genuinely. But like, I look back on them days and laugh, because I just graduated from college. I kind of had a couple of years I said to myself, right, you can enjoy going back to bed, but them days are long gone. So no, listen, it's definitely, listen, it's the end will come for everybody and every walk of life. For me now, I'm definitely not there, but I'm continuing the plan just because that's how I was raised as well. Like, I mean, it's a short career, but you know, like, I'm enjoying it right now and I want to continue to enjoy it.
Yeah, to be fair, not a lot of lads actually go out to wing back later in their career. You must be an okay shape.
They tend to start
coming in and playing in front of the back four or something like that. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Like but, is that you've kind of is that you're too good not to play in the team, or is that you actually have looked after yourself that well in your career? Now, if it involved sleeping during the day a lot, maybe that's the answer. But I'm genuinely wondering. You don't get 33, you're going to be 33 this year, you don't get 33-year-old wing-backs, particularly at the best team in the country.
Yeah, I think a lot of, it is about looking after yourself, but I think genetically I've been lucky as well. Like, I mean, I think that plays a part of it as well. I would have, you know, older siblings that are still in good shape, and I kind of maybe knew that I'd still be able to go later on in life. So, but I do, listen, I take care of myself as best I can. Listen, you're training every day, so you're giving yourself the best chance possible to be in the best shape you can be. And the intensity in training is actually very, very high. So, I mean, you've got to be at it each day to maintain that level of fitness. But no, listen, my brother, sisters, they're in good shape. They're older than me. So I kind of knew that I'd have half a chance.
Good. So, listen, Ronan, just final question actually before we let you go. It's funny you mentioned that experience that you have. I'm just looking at, I don't know how much training you do with, say, the second team and how often they come in, out, and they're around you. But, like, do you look at someone like Kevin Zeffie now, who scored at, like, what, 15 for the first division team last week? I mean, do you speak to these lads? Because obviously they're probably at another stage of life where there's a lot of hype around Kevin, like, for example, and these lads. And do you speak to them and chat to them about their own expectations?
Yeah, I know Kevin well because I would have coached Kevin like last year, and he would have been 14th last year. But geez, he's graduated very quickly. He should be playing 15s. I mean, Joey would help coach the 15s, so he should be one of our boys. But he certainly bypassed us, and he's bypassed the 17s, and he's bypassed the 19s, and now he's in. Like, I mean, it's some graduation, but hey, like, he's just an extremely talented kid. Like, raw ability, you know, proper, like, both street footballer and like, he's a strong boy. He's not a kid. Like, you know, he'd be able to handle a men's football, and he's proven that. But you come in training with us regularly enough, and like, I mean, you treat him like a man, because you can't tiptoe around him, because he's playing football now that he will get hurt, and he's well able for a Kev. Like, he's able to take, he loves contact, he actually loves using his body, he'd be quite strong. Like, so he's a really bright future, but like anything, you need to be level headed. Mm. You know, as soon as you lose that, thinking, you all of a sudden, you see your name in the paper, you see your name, you're looking for your name on Twitter, you're looking for your name here and there. The world can suddenly transpire against you, and all of a sudden, when you're not hitting them heights, people love to knock you. Mm. So, like, it's gas. Like, you know, I would have always said, when things are going well, just take it in your stride, because when things aren't going so well, it'll be the same people that are hammering you. So, I mean, any kid coming through, or that's the advice I'd be giving, just don't get ahead of yourself, because you might be looking for your name in the paper on a Saturday morning after a Friday night game. But trust me, like, you know, things can unravel very fast, and you've got to take the good with the good, but, you know, take the bad, because the bad will come at certain times in your career. You just got to, you got to roll with it. You got to have the mental strength to, you know, to, when things are going well, be, you know, enjoy it, but also be level headed. But when things are going bad, you, like, mentally strong.
I think that's a really, really profound answer to a guy who came on against Longford and by all accounts could have gotten a hat-trick at 15 years of age in 20 minutes or so. Ronan, it's brilliant having you on, and obviously on behalf of LOI Weekly, we wish you the best against Milan, and before that, obviously hope you have a good game against Cork.
Yeah. Oh, lovely, lads. Thanks. Fair play, guys.
Cheers, Ronan. Thanks very much.
Cheers, man. Cheers, Ira. Bye-bye.
Don't forget to visit lottoland.ie/sportsbook, where you'll find all the odds and weekly special bets for the SSE or Tricity Premier Division. This week, with the return of the Premier League, Lottoland is offering two price boosters. The first of which is a combo bet of Premier League and the LOI. Back Bowes, Rovers, Liverpool and Spurs from 9-2 to sixes. And you can back Filippo Giovagnoli's Dundalk to win and Shells not to score, boosted from 5-4 to 7-4. That is an attractive bet.
if you believe in the Italian project. Visit lottoland.ie/sportsbook.
Yeah, pretty sensible stuff from Ronan Finn. But in fairness, Dan, this man deserves a lot of credit for going as well as he is. This is no league for old men, and certainly not a right wing back. He's a credit to himself, and he's still such a hugely influential player. And I would suspect that his experience has been important, as he referenced there. They're not exactly a team full of league winners, I expect, because Rovers mentally they do look a lot more with it than they used to be.
Yeah, no, like it's first of all, like Roman's like had a, probably one of the great recent League of Ireland careers, really, like, you know, and someone who definitely at times in his career probably could have operated at a better level, but as quite interesting there, like he's also reached a sort of an understanding of what he needs to do off the pitch as well too, and he's got to the stage where, you know, he's probably got a plan and a focus in mind about what he wants to do. And, you know, did he necessarily ever need to go over and play sort of League One or League Two for the sake of it? You know, yeah. I'm sure at times, you know, when he was younger, that might have appealed, you know, if the right move had come up and he had opportunities to go away, probably around the same time that Sean Williams did, who's had a terrific career, you know. Mm. So it's a funny one, but like he's a sort of a multiple league winner. I suppose he is himself and Stephen O'Donnell and Kilduff, actually, you know, they've played in both of the group stage campaigns of Irish clubs, you know, so clearly, like, there's no coincidence about sort of the characters that you're talking about that have been involved in those, like particularly with Finn and O'Donnell as sort of, you know, midfield characters, like quality players who lead a dressing room on. And you know, the move from Dundalk, was probably short-term pain in some degree, you know, and football pain, but probably long-term gain in terms of where he's at with his life, you know, being based in Dublin at a certain stage of his career. So
absolutely, yeah. They'll probably be Cork, but I actually do fancy them to... I've applied for accreditation for the game, and I'm not sure if I'll get it. I'm hoping to get there, but I fancy that they actually will give Milan... I think they'll give them a game.
Yeah, listen, we'll talk about it next week. I don't think we need to do, like, overboard, because we're going to have two European games next week. But I see your point. I mean, I suppose, if anything, you've seen with the international games the last week, you know, that... the teams that are in a bit of pre-season mode versus teams that are a bit sharper, that there can be differences. Like even the Finnish player who was outstanding, Robert Taylor, who's a Norwegian league player, played for Brann, albeit he only joined them. He wasn't there last year when they played Rovers. He joined them over the winter. But you could see with a couple of the Nordic and Scandinavian-based players that they...
You didn't use Scandinavian in your match report, did you?
No, God, I'll just have to go and...
The Sam Bennett being claimed to be British today, like, didn't go down well with Sean Kelly.
Deleted from the dark web. anyway, like, you know, yeah. But there, I think there possibly is a point that what you have with Rovers is that they're a team that does try and keep the ball. So I guess if you have a team that's in pre-season that's a bit sluggish, you know, and they're just like, oh, God, we're coming, and they're just pinging it a small bit. Yeah, I can see how they can be competitive, but we'll talk about it next week. They're also...
I presume you're going, are you?
They're top-class professionals. They're going to be well-conditioned. Yeah, I would assume so anyway. So, it's still a big event, but obviously there's an element of a small element of anti-climax about the build-up, because you don't have that ticket rush and all that goes with it. But we'll talk about that next week. I suppose this week, it's weird because the Dundalk didn't play last week with the internationals. I've gone up to the Dundalk Shells.
This Shells game is fascinating.
Air Sport game on Friday.
September the 11th, and Dundalk versus Shells. I like Shells this season. I think they're well set up to take on teams away from home. What are we expecting from our favourite Italian in the league?
Well, you see, this is the thing. It is actually his first league game, so I'm sort of interested. Like the Cove game... And listen, Cove actually had a good run of results, so I'm not just going to flippantly go, oh, it was only Cove. But I guess still, like, you know, you still expect a full-time Premier club to be a first division club. So you couldn't really say, oh, positive signs here. You know, the pitch was a bit iffy as well. I suppose people could say that about Oriel too. But I think actually after, like, basically 2 weeks on the training ground, and what you have is, you know, apparently, like, you know, an intense enough sort of run of preparation. But let's see, is there a pattern? I think actually anything that happened in Cove, it was so short notice. I don't even think you could attribute it to the new team in any way. Whereas I think now what happens on Friday and like how they set up and even just how they approach the game, like there was definitely a, a scattiness in the final couple of weeks. And obviously there was a lot of stuff going on off the pitch, but even just falling 2-0 down at home to Waterford and just things that you don't expect in a dog team. They're just really sloppy. It'll be interesting to see, because they have a big European game next week, which they'll fancy themselves to win. And then potentially, you know, another game the week after. So it's almost like they've had 2 weeks in the long grass to prepare. And let's see if there's actually, if there's something coming that represents improvement, or is it just like, you know, it's just a massive false dawn and it's going to be more of the same. But that's probably one of the more interesting. I mean, Cork Rovers, you know, massive game at both ends. But like, I think every game you look at in the fixture list now, you can find an angle in it, because everyone has something to play for. There's not one team in the league at the moment in that mid-table lull. And I mean, the other thing, I think we'll talk about this a bit more in coming weeks, because obviously with Niall Quinn leave, you know, just departed as well for slipping the radar a small bit on Monday. Like, we actually don't really know what type of league we're going to have for 2021. We don't know where we're going to be at with crowds, what we're going to, and as a result, does that impact teams with budgets and all of these things? So this is normally the time of the year where clubs are looking to sign, and I know there's a bit of that going on, but I think it's actually quite hard to plan in the way that the people normally would. And but in a weird way, because everyone's fate is tied up with, are you going to qualify for Europe? Are you going to win the league? Or what are you going to do? That it's actually going to be a pretty interesting couple of weeks ahead.
Absolutely,
where a lot of things can happen, but we'll have no shortage of things to discuss. And we can talk about the European games maybe next week.
Well, the games this week, Bowes against Waterford, like, it's just fascinating that all these games matter so much for both teams, and that's going to be basically the case for the rest of the season. Every game more or less is going to matter. Bowes against Waterford, who shouldn't be unnoticed, have done really well in some respects under John Sheridan. Dundalk Shells, I wonder how Shane Dawson, I don't know if he's presenting, he was presenting Davey last week, one of the most partisan characters you'll ever get in the league. So if he is presenting that game, remember that you're not a Shelburne fan for the night, Shane. You're representing the League of Ireland and you're representing Air Sport. Well, coming from me, that's a bit rich considering. Anyway, Cork City versus Shamrock Rovers on Saturday. Pat Sligo then.
That was just everyone just got the worst TED talk of all time there.
Yeah. The boy Dawson, the last time I saw him, I think, or last time I saw him at a game was when he was in tears in United Park, but he did a great job presenting on Saturday. He's presenting debut. Pat's against Sligo. I don't know, Dan. I just find this fascinating. And then obviously Finn Harps, Derry City. Pat Sligo, I think, this is the type of game, if Pat's win, they start, it could be the kind of U-turn their season needs. But Sligo win, and they're thinking we could actually finish second here.
Yeah, it might just be a draw then. In that case,
it could be a draw. That's predicted.
It can go in any direction. But
Cabin TD would expect we'll get back to winning ways at home to Athlone. Wexford play Bray. Galway versus Shamrock Rovers. Second team, Cove, home to UCD. Longford draw, a massive game there in Longford. And that concludes the fixtures this weekend. Big games all around, Dan.
They all are, yeah. And we will have plenty to pour over next week. We've had two good chats with the lads this week anyway. Two senior figures in the league, Caulfield and Finn.
You were playing ball beforehand as well. Like, it's funny, Ronan Finn was on about how his body hasn't let him down yet. Like, at what point did you feel like, I can't do the things I used to be able to do? Because it is quite, like, I came back from lockdown.
14 years of age. Yeah.
I was going to say like 32 or something, but yeah, I can see.
Did cruciate when I was 23, but that was the end of that. Yeah.
Good to hear from you as ever.
Great to hear you. Great to hear from you. Listen, we're about 38. I've just turned 38. You're about to go 38. So like, we have an affinity towards the older guests. So I think it's good to have two relatively, you know, someone older and someone who's like, you know, born in the 80s.
Kevin Zeffie, to be fair, he's 15. Now, I haven't seen him, but like the game in Tala, like half the chat before the game was on about the Longford game against the second team the night before, because this kid came on and everyone was like, this is a bit ridiculous when you think about what age he is. And he could have gotten a hat trick apparently. And I was like, Jesus, I haven't seen this kid. I know you've heard a lot about him. I don't know. Like, it's mad. It's like, I remember when I was 15.
He was born around the time, 2005. Like, what were you at then?
My life was already going downhill, at that stage. So I was, 23? So, I had a great future behind me when he was born. I don't know about, You were 23. What were you? You were just coming out of UCD, scrapping a living with various organizations, I suppose.
Yeah. Anyway, look at us now. Let's finish the show, Johnny. We're done. We'll be back next week.
That was episode 90. But there are limits.